Okay, we're going to call the Senate Judiciary Committee to order. We have a quorum consisting of myself, my vice chairman, Senator John Coghill, Senator Mia Costello, Senator Bill Willikowski. Today we have two items on the agenda, the confirmation hearings of gubernatorial appointments and then Senate Bill 43. We're going to start with the confirmation hearing of Richard Larson. And he is calling all the way from Boston, Massachusetts today. So, Richard, are you there?
Yes, I am.
And if you could speak a little louder, but we were just having a conversation offline about Skyping, so I wish we'd have already implemented what we're going to do next session, which is that we would have you up on a screen right now so that we could see you. But we can't, so, yes. So we can feel as if you were right here in the committee. Much better.
Okay. Do you want me to have an opening statement?
Yes. If you just put your name on the record, your affiliation, whatever you want to be associated with, and then why you've accepted the offer to be on the state board of parole.
Okay. Thank you. My name's Richard Ole Larson. I go by Ole Larson, and I'm seeking my second term on the Board of Parole. I was in the Alaska Department of Corrections for 29 plus years, and I retired as the superintendent of Matsu pretrial. I'm also on the Matanuska Sioux Citizens School Board, so I can see both aspects of education versus parolees and the reasons why and why not they end up where they're at. And what we're trying to do on the Board of Parole now is assure that our parolees have the opportunity to get into rehabilitation programs and education to bring them out of the cycle of crime that they've been into and get into society in a normal or norm type setting. Like I said, this will be my second term if confirmed, my second 5 years, and I would look forward to serving the state as I have the last 5 years.
Excellent. I will ask if members have questions. Senator Coghill?
Thank you, Ollie, for doing this. We're trying to figure out ways to do just exactly what you said, and that is how to give people a path of correction rather than imprisonment. And so the parole board has been a significant part of that. In giving people opportunity to kind of recover a productive life, what are some of the tools that you've seen that have been more effective? Because we're thinking that through down here on what we can direct our Department of Corrections to help them with on parolees. There's a whole range of other people, but parolees have some unique challenges. So can you help us, what are some of the more effective tools you've seen now that you've been there for a while?
Well, we've seen that we're going through a program called PACE, which is a swift and sure type sanctions where an individual is sanctioned right away and told to, say they get it back into drugs, they're put into jail for a couple of days and then brought back out. They have to go get an assessment and get into a drug and alcohol program. Some of the best programs I've seen are drug and alcohol programs and bringing their family into it, also not having them do it independently. A lot of times a parolee will just go in and do the program and check the box off and then turn around and violate again. And that's what we're trying to keep away from, that these programs become effective, not only in drug and alcohol, but what we call cognitive thinking programs as well as moral recognition programs to subsidize those programs they go through. And once they get out of them, look at long-term care or aftercare. And in other words, they just don't go through the program and get out there and forget all the tools that they've learned to reinforce those tools. And that's what we really strive for. And we can make a difference there, I believe.
The is one of the questions.
Yes, absolutely. Senator Cocco.
I appreciate that, and you know, we looked over the PACE program last year and revved it up a little bit, so we're good. Some of the things that we'll be thinking about is how to get people who have been either a long time in jail and are a felon, who have maybe lost some privileges, whether it's driving or being able to go hunting. Do you think we should use the parole board as a vetting tool for people that maybe, say, after 5 years can go through a parole process? Or do you think going through one of the specialty courts that suits their need is better? Or is there a combination of both of them? Have you thought that through, or have you just had that discussion on the parole board?
Well, you know, we've had a discussion about clemency, which is similar to that, where somebody can apply to the governor's office for clemency. The clemency board is not there. It's up and ready to go, and the parole staff. There's like, I want to say 80 or 90 applicants now. Parole staff go through those applications, make sure those applications are up to date and ready to go, and then submit them to the governor's office or the clemency board. The clemency board hasn't been effective or hasn't been in operation since about 8 years now, since the end of Frank Murkowski's administration. But it's up and ready to go again, and hopefully under this new governor it can be utilized. And that's kind of what you're talking about doing. Also, an individual can come back after years of successful parole and ask the parole board for early release off of parole. And we've done that also because if somebody's got, you know, 4, 5, 6 years of success in parole, I mean, have 4 or 5 years of parole, and they've been successful for three or four years, you know, we will seriously look at that and then cut them off of parole because they've proven through their family life, their work, all the entities that make people successful, and they're doing that. So, yeah. So we look at early release also.
Excellent. Other questions? Senator Costello.
Thank you, Ole, and your experience and background seems perfect for this board. And I'm a parent of kids in the Anchorage School District and a former teacher, and I've actually worked with kids who've dropped out of high school. And my question is, you know, we often hear the connection between reading by third grade and how that translates into more opportunities for kids later on and an avoidance of the criminal system. And I just, with your wealth of experience, I was hoping to get your thoughts on that and any direction you might have for the legislature or any research that you can point towards that, because I think a lot of the times early on in someone's early years, we can do things there to prevent them on a track to end up in prison.
I do seriously look at their education level when they come up in front of the parole, and I agree totally that education is a means of changing somebody's direction. And you're correct, at third grade, the reading level needs to be there. And if it's not, intervention needs to be done, like in the fourth and fifth grade. We need to catch them early. And we strive to do that in the district that I'm working in as a school board member. We give directions, of course, on the school board. We don't do the work. But the direction is to maintain these kids, and give them options. And, what we've been trying to do since the Valley actually has almost about 1,800 prisoners in it, with a new prison sitting there, Palmer Correctional Center, mm-hmm. in Mat-Su, we have a lot of parents of incarcerated, a lot of children of incarcerated parents, and so we've actually taught a few courses out there to our teachers on how to deal with children with incarcerated parents and how to give them that extra motivation. And not only in learning and reading, but also in career tech, because all our kids are not college-bound children, but career tech also. And we're trying to reach down into the elementary school, middle school, prior to them getting to high school. Because what we see in parole and in prisons is these kids start dropping out their freshman, junior, or freshman, sophomore years when they have fallen so far behind. So we want to keep that middle school, fifth, sixth, seventh grade up. So when they get into eighth and ninth grade, they're not looking at faltering and failing. And the other thing we try to do out in the valley, and I know the Anchorage School District does also, is when a kid drops out of school, we try to go find them, find their parents, and see what we can offer them alternative to a traditional high school. What services we can give them to get them back into school and motivated.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
Thank you, and I just wanted to toss out sort of my view of where we have an untapped opportunity, and that is with the school business partnerships. I would like to see those partnerships really strengthen with classroom teachers and the partners where we are inviting those partners and their employees to come in and actually be with the kids reading with them and really have an aggressive approach to how we identify those students and get them help, like he said, as they're entering fourth grade, so that they aren't on a track where they're hiding, that they are not able to read, and then they're behind. Just, it's not an equation for success, but I think there's an opportunity there. So, and I want to thank Ole for your service. We really appreciate that.
Absolutely. Thank you. Yeah, it's years of service. I mean, dating back to 1976. I was just looking at your first stint was at McLaughlin. And, I mean, that's just a very hard place. Hard place. And I know you invested a lot in it, and there are no easy answers, so thank you. Any further questions for Ole?
Yes, that experience at McLaughlin was worth a its weight in gold when I went from McLaughlin into the adult corrections. At the time, it was the division of corrections where McLaughlin and adult corrections were the same. And that gave me a real big eye-opener into the adult corrections and also into education. And it's been able to help me through my career and into the service that I'm doing now for the state.
Well, I echo Senator Costello's thanks for you stepping up, and I hope you won't limit it to just the Board of Parole. It doesn't sound like you have. With somebody like you in our state, we have such a small state and so few people. I mean, you've got to be in about 2% or less of the state that have had the kind of experience that you've had. As we struggle to understand, you know, how to contain the cost of corrections, but really more importantly, the ability to turn lives around, you know, to deter and rehabilitate people who have crossed over into the corrections world. And so I appreciate all your remarks today. And if there's no further comment from committee, then I'll let Ole get on with his day. Is there anything further? Okay. So with that, we'll let you go, Mr. Larson, and go to Gustav Sandahl. He is the chief of the Kenai Police Department in Kenai. And Gustav has been appointed by the governor to sit on the Alaska Police Standards Council. So, Chief Sandahl, that would seem appropriate. You're the chief of police in Kenai. If you could offer, put your name on the record and maybe just tell us a little bit about yourself and why you accepted the governor's ask for you to serve on the Alaska Police Standards Council.
Thank you, Senator McGuire. My name is Gus Sandahl. I've lived most of my life in Alaska. And I have almost 20 years of law enforcement experience in the state, and that's entirely with the Kenai Police Department. And during my time in the Kenai Police Department, I've had several significant roles that I feel helped me contribute to the Alaska Police Standards Council and the discussions and the decisions that we have to make. I also work for a busy city, busy department, and all that experience helps contribute to that as well. And I have a bachelor's degree in criminal justice administration from Boise State University, and I appreciate the appointment from the governor. I'm up for my second term right now, and it's been a fulfilling experience serving the first term, and it's been a pleasure to have the interaction that I've had with the other professionals on the Alaska Police Standards Council. And we have an important role that requires diligent preparation for every meeting, and a significant part of what we have to review and decide on for every meeting is misconduct by police officers and correctional officers in making a determination if those officers' certification should be revoked. We have a staff in the Alaska Police Standards Council that does a great deal of the year-round work coordinating training throughout the state for police officers and helping departments make good use of the surcharges from traffic violations and also criminal offenses. So I'm willing to serve another term, and I've enjoyed the experience, and I'll continue to work diligently so that I'm a strong contributor for the second term. So I appreciate any consideration that you give me.
Excellent. Thank you, Chief Sandahl. We appreciate your service already, and the fact that you've been reappointed again speaks highly of you, especially considering that we moved from, a Republican governor to a unity ticket. So not many have made that crossover. So consider yourself, fortunate, and I think it speaks highly of you. So, Senator Wilikowski? Senator Coghill?
Just a gratitude, being willing to serve on this as oversight of the police. I just wanted to echo your gratitude, because you have to be a part of the industry, if you will, and kind of know the inner workings. And so, Gus, thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator Coghill.
Anything further? Okay, nothing further. Thank you, Chief Sandahl, and thanks for all the work out there in Kenai, growing area, and a lot of challenges. And thank you for your willingness to continue to serve on the Alaska Police Standards Council. We'll do all the... Thank you.
Thank you very much, Senator McGuire, and members of the committee.
Thank you. We'll do all the reports at the end. Okay, Amy. So we do finally have Rebecca Hammond on the line, and I know, Rebecca, I passed a note to members that you were having difficulty getting on the line, but we appreciate that you can. You're out of King Salmon. I've spent many years of my life there, and I know how difficult the telecommunications are there. So welcome to the Senate Judiciary Committee. We're happy to have you, having received a nomination from the governor for the Alaska Police Standards Council. So put your name on the record, please, and tell us a little bit about yourself and what the weather's like in King Salmon today, and why you want to be on the Alaska Police Standards Council.
My name is Rebecca Hammond, and the weather is very nice, a little cloudy, but very warm here. We're used to a lot more winter than we got this year. We've had hardly any snow, and it's been a very strange winter. So I work for and have worked for SAFE. It stands for Safe and Fear-Free Environment. It's an agency out of Dillingham, Alaska, which is about 100 miles from me. I work as a village and legal advocate, and what I'm doing is providing advocacy to victims of domestic violence and sexual assault. And I cover the NACNIC court district, and that court district covers our three villages here, South NACNIC, King Salmon, and NACNIC. And it also covers the 16 or so villages that are in the Lake and Penn borough, Lake and Peninsula borough, and then some other villages down the chain a little ways that are not covered by other agencies. And so as an advocate, working with victims, I help people navigate the complicated court system when they when someone has been charged in a crime against them. I help people deal with applying for and dealing with protective orders and all sort of different legal processes that may crop up when a person is trying to rebuild their life after violence. I work with the victims, but I also work in partnership with our local police department and with the Alaska State Troopers who oversee these areas. I also work with Office of Children's Services and various other faith-based groups and whoever is working with these same people. We try to approach offering services as a team effort. And so, working on the Police Standards Council these last 2 years and being reappointed has been and will be a really great opportunity for me. It has helped me understand some of the other team players I'm working with and their concerns and the issues and challenges they have in their work. I feel like to the board, I bring a different viewpoint. Most of the people on the board have a police work background, at least, and I do not. So I'm coming to the issues from maybe a little bit of a different viewpoint. A lot of my work is really just being a community member as well. I've lived out in this village for 17 years. This next September and raised my family out here, and so I feel like it's important to be a healthy and productive team member as far as the community goes as well. And so I hope to bring understanding to the council and to the rest of the state of some of the issues that we have out here living in these rural villages. And I'm happy for the opportunity, and I'd be happy to answer any other questions.
Excellent. Thank you, Rebecca. You have a very interesting resume. Very interesting. I love it. I love your past studies in fine arts. I love watching your migration in your career from the House of Fabrics, you know, all the way up. And I'm thankful that the state of Washington drops off and then we pick up with AK. I think you're a gift to our state. Really pleased that you're a part of the community. I know people. Our family used to have the Quinault Landing Hotel there for many years. And I know people that know you well. I do not know you personally, but I think you've been quite a gift to the community out there. And so I thank you for what you've done. And I think it's refreshing to have a public member that is truly a public member, that doesn't have a background or a bias coming into the particulars of each case. So I applaud this governor for reaching out to somebody that's truly a public member. So turn it to members of the committee.
Once again, Madam Chair, just to express our gratitude, this is another duty and looks like a very busy life, so we're grateful.
So, absolutely. Thank you, Rebecca. And yeah, and don't give up on your kids there with the choir and all the arts and things that you're doing as well. I don't know how to tell you how to manage that. And certainly, you know, the safe and fear-free environment, having spent so much of my life, I guess I would say every summer for about 12 years, what a job that you're doing there. So I don't know how you'll balance it all, but good luck to you, and thank you for your service. Okay, so with that, we will go to Senate Bill 43. And Senator Coghill, last we were, we had Chief Flynn testified. Senator Coghill, I'm going to turn it over to you to direct us.
All right, Madam Chair, I could have Jordan Schilling come up. The big thing at this point was for those who have called in to testify, I think they're available for questions. But at this point, maybe just another high overview from Jordan Schilling so that to kind of refresh the memory of those. I think we hit at pretty fast speed last time. So.
Excellent. Let's do that.
For the record, Jordan Schilling, staff to Senator Coghill.
No, can you hear him? Is that microphone? I don't think that microphone's...
For the record, Jordan Schilling, staff to Senator Coghill.
Good. Thank you. Okay, Jordan, go ahead and just refresh our memory.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Alaska has a fire department immunity statute. It applies broadly to staff of fire departments and then in some cases the fire departments themselves. Inadvertently, it seems that the statute, which was established in the mid-70s, does not provide protections to contract fire departments, departments that have a relationship with a local government. We've identified seven departments that, having said that, we've identified some departments that are exposed to some additional liability and some municipalities that are exposed to that liability as well. This bill would be to extend that protection to the contract departments so that liability does not exist.
Okay, and Senator Wierkowski, you were walking through the original statute in Title IX, we're over in the Belts Room, and we talked about some of the changes that you were concerned about. So I'd like to just have you briefly go on the record to say if they've been addressed or if you need further time.
No, I'm good. I appreciate Jordan came to my office and we spent a little while going through this, and I'm happy with the bill, and at this point I plan on supporting it.
Okay, excellent.
Madam Chair,
Senator Coghill.
Just to round out part of the thought on this, in my area, almost everything is a volunteer fire department. But they're in the North Star Borough, and they're called the North Star Borough Fire Service Areas. Yeah. And so they're contract to the borough. We depend upon them for fire service and EMS service. And it's just one of those things where if you're in Anchorage, they have this immunity, and it's just not true here. So it actually, I think we cleaned up even some of the language yet to make sure that there was no purposeful mischief done that would excuse them of that behavior.
What about benefits? I got to thinking about it, and we have a few minutes. So what about benefits to these contract firemen and women? Do they,
Madam Chair, like how much are they compensated?
Are they under the state system by virtue of our state firemen and women get those benefits, but if you're in contract status, do you get that?
Madam Chair, that's a good question. I don't believe so, but Chief Flynn, who's on the line, can tell us how the compensation works.
So, I was just thinking about it because it's such an amazing job. You know, you're running into a fire when we're running out, and I thought about the immunity question. It seems exactly right that we should treat all fire departments equally, but I wondered about benefits. So, Chief Flynn, can you tell us?
Yes, this is Mitch Flynn, Fire Chief of the State Fire Department in Fairbanks, a volunteer department, and we do have some of the same benefits. We're under the presumptive illness bill.
Okay.
If we contract cancer, that is presumed it's from the fire.
For lungs.
That we have given. Okay. As far as medical benefits, we provide that through the company, and also leave, accrual, that kind of thing. So we have similar benefits, but it's not with the state itself. Does that answer your question?
That answers my question. Thank you. I just wondered, it was, a big lesson for us here on the committee to note that there were five, different units within Fairbanks, one in Chugach and actually one in Anchorage, that were, serving Alaskans, saving lives, the response times were equally important. So the difference between life and death of a family member or a home burning down with family heirlooms and all those things, and yet they weren't necessarily under the same rubric that we think of with fire departments. So it's important that we think about you guys. We want to say thank you for what you do in the volunteer fire departments, and we're not forgetting about you, but I just want to ask about your benefits too. So any further questions on Senate Bill 43? Yes, Senator Costello.
Thank you, Jordan. I was just curious if there's been any opposition to this legislation that you know of.
Through the chair, Senator Costello, no, all positive.
And has there been any litigation related to this issue that this bill could have prevented or been provided clarity for?
Through the chair, Senator Costello, Senator Wilkowski asked me the same thing this morning. I'm only aware of one just in our neighborhood. There was a case in the Fairbanks North Star Borough where a gentleman sued a handful of fire departments and chiefs of those fire departments because he felt that his they could have done a better job putting out the fire, was what he contended. And normally this immunity statute would have prevented that, and that's kind of when this issue came about. It's when we kind of recognized that this immunity statute needed to be beefed up a little bit.
Thank you.
Excellent. Okay, anything further? Okay, with that, anyone else? I don't see anyone else, but in the audience, I see our loyal team members, our staff, but I'll ask anyone else in the audience that wishes to testify on Senate Bill 43? Anyone else online that wishes to offer further testimony on the new committee substitute for Senate Bill 43? Okay, hearing and seeing none, I'll close public testimony on Senate Bill 43 and ask for a motion. Senator Klotko.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, with that, I would move that we move the CS for Senate Bill 43, Community and Regional Affairs, out of committee with individual recommendations and zero fiscal note.
Okay. Is there any objection to that motion? Okay. Hearing and seeing none, the CS for Senate Bill 43 with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes will move out of the Senate Judiciary Committee. And with that, we're adjourned.